John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for not, oh no, my phone's just sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Tuesday, November 6, 2012. Three Israeli soldiers injured during clashes near the Gaza borders, while Israeli forces demolished two Palestinian-owned homes in the West Bank. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli sources reported that three Israeli soldiers were injured on Tuesday morning when an explosive device planted near the border fence with Gaza detonated near their vehicle. One of the soldiers suffered light to moderate wounds due to a limb injury and was moved to Siroka Medical Center in Beersheba. The other two soldiers suffered mild injuries and were treated by military medics. The explosion took place near Khan Yunis city in the southern part of the Gaza Strip and was caused by an explosive device planted by Palestinian fighters in Gaza, the Israeli army said. According to the Israeli online Ynet News, Palestinian fighters exchanged fire with the soldiers after the blast. No injuries were reported in the ensued clashes. Elsewhere, Israeli soldiers demolished Tuesday two Palestinian homes, a barn and two wells, and handed demolition orders against four more homes in the villages of Al-Darrat and Al-Jawaya, south of Hebron, in the southern part of the West Bank. The army wants to evict the Palestinians in order to declare the area as a closed military zone to be used for training. It is worth mentioning that dozens of homes were previously demolished in areas around Hebron district under the same military claims. In other news, five Palestinians were kidnapped on Tuesday at dawn by Israeli soldiers from the city of Tubas in the central West Bank. Soldiers invaded the city and searched several homes. Local sources said that the army fired rounds of live ammunition and flares before breaking into several homes and violently searching them. Eyewitnesses reported that soldiers also invaded Al-Fara nearby area, installed several roadblocks, and interrogated dozens of residents. No arrests were reported. The army kidnapped on Sunday evening and Monday at dawn at least 14 Palestinians in different parts of the occupied West Bank. We'll be right back. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Tuesday, November 6th News Roundup from the Occupied Palestinian Territories. For more news and updates, please visit our room site at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hassan Kassis and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
Afghanistan, 3rd of November. NATO is reporting the deaths of three soldiers of unreported nationality from an IED blast in an undisclosed location in eastern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 5th of November. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from non-combat related injuries in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Is this yet another GI suicide? Or another rollover in a top-heavy, up-armored Humvee? Afghanistan, 1st of November. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from an insurgent attack in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 2nd of November. Four Afghan police were killed by another Afghan cop. The attacking policeman suddenly opened fire during a shift change at a police outpost. In other words, cops are killing cops in Afghanistan. This has increased substantially this year, but has happened throughout the war. Same with Afghan soldiers killing both other Afghan security force troops and American soldiers. Mr. Barack Obama, this has been going on since the Soviet Union was occupying Afghanistan, and nothing's going to change it. Now is the time to throw in the towel. Bring all the troops home today. On the 5th of November, about 30 Armed Forces veterans and Occupy DC supporters slept in front of the Department of Veterans Affairs in a vigil that's been going on over a month as this is recorded. Here's what one of the participants had to say earlier on the 5th of November.
For those of you that don't know, this is Occupy the Department of Veterans Affairs.
This is Occupy the Department of Veterans Affairs.
We have been here for 1 month. We're trying to bring attention. To the issues that the veterans are suffering from. What is it, 9% of homeless?
Over 750,000.
Over 750,000.
Over 750,000.
Veterans are homeless.
Veterans are homeless.
We just want reform.
We just want reform.
And they won't talk to us.
And they will not talk to us.
So the veterans. Are staying out here. Until they will talk to them. And change their ways.
The night of November 5th to November 6th was bitterly cold, but that failed to drive away the outdoor sleepers in vigil. This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. The D.C. area caught an incredible break with Hurricane Sandy. The storm path was just far enough north, going up Delaware Bay rather than the Chesapeake Bay, that we were spared the worst. Other places were not so lucky. Atlantic City got hammered. The homes of the poor were flooded, while the homes of the wealthy and the casinos were untouched. New York City had catastrophic damage. Subway tunnels filled with water. 80 homes burned, homes of police and firefighters, because nobody could get equipment in a storm. In less than a decade, two American cities have been devastated by Katrina-style storms. No thanks to global warming, no thanks to the coal, oil, and gas industries. As this is being recorded, Occupy Wall Street activists and other activists are setting up a relief operation in New York City, offering better food than FEMA does, following the same pattern that was followed by the Common Ground Medical Collective in Algiers, New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. It's all gonna fall on you. This time we were lucky. Next time we might not be, with superstorms like Katrina and Sandy becoming a reality of life in a world of global climate change.
In the wake of a one-of-a-kind hurricane merged with a nor'easter storm that smashed into the East Coast on October 29th, the issue of climate change is now front and center, at least among those who consider the strange and extreme weather the world has been experiencing the past year or two to be linked to climate change. What's happening is exactly what 98% of the world's climate scientists predicted would happen. It's just happening much sooner than many thought it would. Before Hurricane Sandy, the climate change group 350.org had already planned what it's calling their Do the Math tour starting November 7th, the day after the presidential election. With both President Barack Obama and challenger Mitt Romney trying to outdo each other in support of fossil fuel extraction, 350.org founder Bill McKibben says the time is right to promote the conclusion he reached in his recent article in Rolling Stone magazine, that known reserves of oil, coal, and gas hold five times more carbon than climate scientists think is safe to burn. Organizers hope their 21-city Do the Math tour will spark a nationwide fossil fuel divestment campaign at colleges and universities and inspire new protests against the industry. Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus spoke with Daniel Kessler, media campaigner with 350.org, about the tour and the divestment campaign, which will include a video appearance by Archbishop Desmond Tutu urging people to join the new movement based on the divestment model that helped to end apartheid in South Africa.
We're launching our Do the Math tour the day after the election. It's on November 7th, and there's some symbolism behind that. We're looking kind of outside the political process because the political process isn't moving at the speed that we need it to. So we're going to be pointing some of our energies directly at the fossil fuel industry, and that's why we're launching this tour. It's going to be going to 21 cities in about 25 days. It's going to be going at breakneck speed. And the point of it is to go around and kind of talk to people about the math behind the climate crisis, where, you know, how much warming we can actually take on this planet, how much carbon we have left to burn, and how much carbon reserves the fossil fuel industry currently has. And when you look at the numbers, they currently have about five times in their reserves what we can burn if we want to stay below a safe level of temperature rise.
What does 350.org consider a safe level of temperature rise?
You know, every country, including the United States, came together in 2009 in Copenhagen, and they all agreed that 2 degrees was the red line. That was the number, 2 degrees Celsius. That's the number that we don't want to go beyond. And we've already raised the Earth's temperature about 0.8 degrees Celsius, so we're almost halfway there.
Your campaign points to the fossil fuel industry as the enemy. What are you focusing on?
Oil, gas, and coal. And the reason for it is that, you know, the atmosphere doesn't really discriminate when it comes to fossil fuels, that we actually need to stop burning all of them and transition to renewable energy as soon as we can. And so those companies have been responsible for, you know, buying off our politicians, making sure that we can't see progress in this country. And, you know, we're seeing the effects of what burning their product, their carbon product, is on our climate. And, you know, most people just poke their head outside their window this year and they've seen some of the crazy extreme weather that's going on. We broke 3,100 temperature records in June. We're now experiencing the 330th consecutive month where the average temperature has exceeded average norms. And so things are getting crazy, and people are seeing that, and we know who's responsible for it. It's the fossil fuel companies.
And Daniel Kessler, what's your strategy? Divestment? Boycott?
Right, we're launching a divestment campaign, and it's based on what happened in with the anti-apartheid movement in the 80s. where students really rose up on campus and said that it's immoral for their money to be wrapped up in companies that are investing in South Africa. And we're going to be launching a similar model, essentially saying that it's immoral for school endowments to have their money wrapped up in fossil fuel companies, the same companies that are kind of baking the planet for the, that these students are going to have to inherit. So, no, we're not asking people to boycott. That wouldn't be very effective. And yes, of course, we all do use fossil fuels. But the question is when we're going to transition off them and what are the obstacles to doing that? And the fossil fuel companies, you know, have an incentive to keep us hooked on their product, and they've done a very good job at that. And this effort around divestment is going to be a way to push back.
So this is a totally campus-focused tour?
No, we're going to some universities and some cities. And, you know, one of the campaigns that we're going to be really focusing on next year is on this divestment work, but it's by no means the only campaign we'll be running. We'll be doing lots of stuff that's aimed at the fossil fuel industry and kind of attacking their social license to operate, essentially saying that their business model is predicated on cooking the planet, and that needs to stop.
Neither Romney nor Obama has raised climate change in this campaign. And alas, not one of the moderators for the vice presidential debate or the three presidential debates have mentioned it. What does that say to you?
Well, you can interpret that in a lot of different ways. I've been thinking about it in two ways. One is that it's clear the fossil fuel industry has, in some respects, got what they've been trying to do, which is silencing our politicians and our voices around this and stifling dissent and making sure that there's a lot of misinformation out there. And the candidates, you have to say that it's kind of a moral failing on their behalf that they haven't addressed the climate crisis. But the other way I've been looking at it is from an electoral standpoint. And the polls show that people want a transition onto renewable energy, onto clean energy, and off of fossil fuels. So any politician who takes that challenge on would probably see a benefit from it. So it's quite mysterious why neither candidate will address the climate challenge.
You mentioned this is just one of the campaigns 350.org is working on. Can you say anything about other campaigns?
Well, we're going to be doing a lot of stuff, but you know, most people are probably familiar with our efforts to stop the Keystone XL pipeline from coming down from Canada to the Gulf Coast. And that decision, you know, the president hasn't decided yet what the fate of that pipeline is going to be, and that's sort of our number one political ask. It's putting enough pressure on the president that makes him understand that the people don't want this pipeline, and he must say no to it. So there'll be a lot of action around the pipeline. We're also doing a number of things internationally and lots of other campaigns in the states that we're not quite yet ready to disclose, but I think people are going to think are really exciting.
That was Daniel Kessler, media campaigner with the climate change group 350.org. Find more information on the Do the Math tour on our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
Long and Ostrich at 1900 K Street is the main law firm representing TransCanada, builder of the Keystone XL tar sands export pipeline. On the 5th of November, protesters from Chesapeake Earth First and Occupy DC stormed their building. Four people were arrested when they staged a sit-in at McKenna Long and Ostrich's office doors inside the building and refused to leave. The protest was in solidarity with the tar sands blockade in Texas on the 43rd day of the blockade. It was in solidarity with Lakota people defending their lands from the Keystone XL pipeline itself, and with all Native people resisting the tar sands mining. It was also in solidarity with the Occupy Wall Street folks doing Hurricane Sandy relief in New York and everyone who was hit by this climate-driven storm.
In apocalyptic light, more destruction will unfold. Mother Earth will show a darker side and take a toll.
That's him right there, first floor. That's him right there. Them right here, McKenna, Long, and Ackridge, right here on the first floor, accessible from the street level.
Working for the people who are destroying our planet!
Everyone, let's just wait now.
They're doing civil disobedience in Texas. Civil civil disobedience eventually took the form of four people sitting down, blocking the inside door to the office, while two people stood behind them with the Earth First No Tar Sands Pipeline banner. It took the police quite a while to show up, and longer still to gain control of the doors, at which point they locked the doors in violation of fire codes.
Step back.
Please don't touch me, sir.
Okay, you got to go.
I'm holding the door.
No, you can't hold the door.
So what are you about, to lock the door?
Yes.
It's a fire safety violation if you lock them.
That is what
we will press charges.
Locking the door.
If you lock the doors, it's a fire safety violation. That is locking one of the doors. A revolving door they can legally do is not considered a fire exit. But if you lock any others to lock people in.
So activists just said, okay, if we can't use the doors, you can't either. A secondary barricade was set up of armed lock protesters blocking the outside doors of the building.
Secondary blockade at the door.
And everybody grab your hands to each other like this.
Now it's a double layer blockade. Civil disobedience inside and a defensive blockade at the door.
Eventually, the two people carrying the banner allowed themselves to be escorted out of the building while the other four remained blocking the doors and were eventually arrested. Here's what one of the banner holders had to say.
This law firm has a dozen offices worldwide, about 10 of them in this country. There's one in New York. They need to be constantly disrupted, both here in D.C., in New York, and everywhere they have an office.
It looks like McKenna, Long, and Ostrich, who represent TransCanada, really didn't want the embarrassing publicity of civil disobedience arrests in their office, but four people refused to leave and were eventually carried out in handcuffs.
Thank you!
Back up! Maybe we shouldn't be blocking the crosswalk. Maybe you shouldn't be blocking the crosswalk.
Freedom of the press!
Isn't that incriminating the sidewalk?
Sure is.
In the end, four people were arrested, and McKenna, Long, and Ostrich got an embarrassing dose of bad publicity for having four people blocking their offices and being arrested inside because they represent TransCanada, builder of the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline that would trespass on and cross Lakota territory, carrying tar sands oil whose mines are poisoning over 15 indigenous nations in Alberta, Canada today, and which has been called the fuse to the biggest carbon bomb on the planet, which means the rest of us won't be very far behind the indigenous people that the tar sands mining project is poisoning if this pipeline goes through. Halloween, the 31st of October. Some call it Earth Night. Some say the ghosts of the fallen take vengeance on their torturers this night. On the 31st of October, 2012, Defending Animal Rights Today and Tomorrow and the Anarchist Alliance DC Network teamed up for a night of anti-capitalist trick-or-treating. The first target was Brian Maloney on 15th Street. Global Issues Management for Huntington Life Sciences customer AstraZeneca. Here the protesters stormed into a swanky apartment building.
As the
the cops showed up and entered the building, the protest was quickly filed back out another door and continued the action in the street.
AstraZeneca is a top customer of Hunting and Life Sciences. Hunting and Life Sciences is a notorious animal testing lab in East Millstone, New Jersey, that is being sued by the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals for violating animal welfare laws over 600 times. HLS workers were exposed in over 8 separate investigations between 1997 and 2010.
Protesters finished up at Brian Maloney's place. They marched back into the streets, coming around to the swanky apartment building housing Anita Yuloft, director of federal government relations for Wells Fargo, which is infamous for their investments in private prisons to the GEO Group. Once again, protesters stormed into the building.
I'm so
The federal prison system sends D.C. inmates too. Rivers Correctional Institution is one of Earth's great hell holes, and through their stake in the GEO Group, Wells Fargo Bank is responsible for this. Anita!
Wells Fargo is also infamous for robo-signed foreclosures.
For the people who are foreclosing on homes! You guys shouldn't be throwing us out on the street. You should be throwing the person out on the street who threw thousands of people out into the cold!
As protesters bailed out of Anita Yoloff's fancy apartment building, they marched west on Q Street, then down to P Street, and continued across town into Georgetown until they arrived at the home of John Richardson of the Abbott Fund, wholly owned by Huntington Life Sciences subsidiary Abbott Labs.
Good evening, residents of P Street! We are here!
Protesters capped off the night by marching to the home of Jack Evans, just a few blocks away. Jack Evans is famous for closing 3 homeless shelters and was as responsible as former Mayor Williams himself for spending $750 million on a baseball stadium that destroyed a gay neighborhood.
Jack Evans!
Trick or treat, Jack Evans! We're out here tonight in front of the home of Jack Evans! Jack
Evans!
DC governor was most responsible for closing homeless shelters and destroying neighborhoods to make way for gentrification. Jack Evans was directly responsible for the closure of Randall Shelter in late 2004, where he was a key vote on a 3-person committee insisting on closing Randall. Randall was closed for being too close to the baseball stadium. Several former residents of Randall Shelter froze to death that winter and succeeding winters. Jack Evans, you have the blood of the homeless on your hands. The blood of the homeless men who died because you closed Randall Shelter. Jack Evans, what do you say? How many homeless did you kill today?
Jack Evans, what do you say?
How many homeless did you kill today?
He closed Randall Shelter because it was too close to baseball stadium. But he was also the number one person in the city council to spend $750 million of taxpayer money on that baseball stadium in the first place, along with former Mayor Williams. That stadium destroyed an entire gay neighborhood in the name of baseball and gentrification. Jack Evans, what do you say? How many queers did you bash today?
Jack Evans, what did you say?
How many queers did you bash today?
Come on.
Jack Evans wasn't finished throwing people out in the streets when former Mayor Williams left office. Not by a long shot. Here's a quote from former ANC 2F candidate Howard Marks. Don't know if he was elected or not. Quote, working with Councilmember Jack Evans, we successfully controlled the Franklin School rodent problem by closing down a temporary shelter. He and Jack claim to have moved the homeless men who used to sleep at Franklin into permanent housing.
Yes.
But a lot of that housing turned out to be a myth. Many former Franklin shelter residents were unable to hold on to that housing and are back on the streets. Jack Evans, you're all about throwing people with limited financial means out in the streets so you can build more condos for the rich. As long as the pace of development is rapid, you don't care about the human cost of that development.
That's assault, and I'm a witness.
Mr. Evans, you said you're happy to talk. Would you be willing to have a public press conference to talk about these issues,
absolutely,
talk about the homeless, and talk about the homeless issues here in D.C.?
Absolutely. But I want to bring
you
the mayor
within
with
a week?
But I want to bring the mayor with
you. You want to bring the mayor?
Okay.
That's even better. That's good, much more
control over this than I do.
We would really love
and
to have
I
this.
And I want to bring also Michael Brown, whose committee the homeless is in.
And Mr. Graham, too?
And Jim is the head of human services,
yeah,
so he would be in charge. So Michael, Jim, and the mayor were really the more... I'm happy to come out and talk.
Mr. Jack Evans, people are going to hold you to that promise to meet with community activists about bringing downtown homeless shelters back to D.C. People are going to hold you and Mr. Jim Graham and Mayor Gray and Michael Brown responsible for this and are demanding that the meeting be held in an accessible location, not in the Wilson Building, where people have to go through ID checks and bag searches to get in, and some of the people most familiar with the issue might have trouble participating. This better not end up like when Fenty told residents of Franklin Shelter, quote, if I'm not happy, you're not happy, 1 year before shutting the shelter down and throwing Franklin Shelter residents out into the rain on that cold September morning in 2008. The fur wars continue in D.C. this winter. The swanky fur-selling boutique known as Intermix has moved to a new location in Georgetown, no doubt thinking they left all those fur protesters behind. Despite repeated public protests, Intermix has been claiming there is insufficient public pressure to justify removing fur products from their swanky boutique. Activists have sworn that Intermix will eat those words.
Good evening, Intermix! We are here because of your defeat of farming in the fur industry! The fur industry is responsible for over 50 million deaths each and every year! You are responsible for this because you continue to profit and sell!
Yeah, they're open if people inside.
One of the fur protesters brought the entire body of a dead fox in a trap swinging from a chain that had been a fixture in anti-fur protests in the D.C. area as long ago as the 1990s. The fox used to belong to Walt Rave until his house was burned down because someone didn't like pro-birth control stickers on his car. Walt Rave and four of his five cats were killed in the fire. The dead fox was rescued and is still being brought to fur protests today, such as the Intermix protests in Georgetown on the 3rd of November.
Hey, Intermix, what are you saying?
The fox? What's Walt Rave's fox that he used to carry in protests in front of furs over the decades? Salvaged from the fire.
Some of the rich people going by on M Street didn't like the protest at all, yelling at people to shut up because they don't care about animal torture, just as they don't care about exploiting people to get the money they need to afford to live in Georgetown.
Once again, we are out here in front of the DC store of Intermix. Intermix is a high-scale retailer that sells this fur of skinned animals inside this boutique. We are here demanding that they stop the sale of fur.
When the cops showed up, the first cop on the scene got all huffed and puffed with himself, tried and failed to order the bullhorn turned off.
Turn it off.
Sir, we don't have to.
Come over here. Let me talk to you so I can talk to you about what's going on.
We
got to complain about you.
Okay.
You're blocking the passage. So
we're not packing. We're not blocking any garbage.
The door's locked.
The door's locked. Yeah, because they can't get out.
Intermix, we're not going away. We're not backing down until you stop the sale of fur. We are here demanding you end the sale of fur for World Vegan Month. We are here standing about the exploitation you stand for, that you're selling, that you're profiting from. We are not going away. We are not backing down.
With no legal authority to stop the protest, six cops wound up twiddling their thumbs until the protest ended. This took six cops off the street until Intermix closed for the night and the lights were turned out, and at that point the protesters departed.
Where?